Morning, my name is Vince. I'm a little geeky, as you can tell. I wear a propeller hat most of the time. Today, I want to tell you a story that's a pretty apropos for Halloween. It's a story about a man who I'm convinced is a little bit... You'll get the joke in a second. He's crazy, but I'll let you be the judge. The story starts with him in South America, in the jungle. It's early in the morning, the sun's just coming up. Like, you know when it's just like, the sky's just beginning to blush a little bit? And he's laying on the ground, like this, inside a hollow tree. Like, fully, the tree is so big, it's standing hollow tree, he can actually lay down inside of it. And he's looking up the middle with some binoculars. So can you imagine it? You know, one of those hot, muggy mornings in South America? There's, you know, the sounds of the animals all around you. You're just hanging out inside of a hollow tree like we do, you know? And he's watching hundreds of animals fly around. He can hear them squeaking all over the place. They're flying all over the place. And about 20 of them fly into the hollow tree that he's looking up the middle of. And they start attaching themselves to little nooks and crannies, little things that are jutting out, doing what flying animals do. So let me ask you, what kind of animals fly around in the dark and make squeaking sounds? Exactly. And not just any kind of bats, because it's Halloween, they are... Thank you. Can you imagine this guy laying down on the ground, watching vampire bats through his binoculars? And I'm going to say it this way. All the excess of their life is falling down on him. Does anyone know why bat crap has a special name, like guano? Why it has its own name? But yeah, they're crapping on the guy at the bottom. And not only crapping on the man at the bottom, they are making food available. It's another euphemism today for... I'm trying to think of how to say this nicely. They puke up blood for each other. So he's laying on the ground, getting crapped on by bats, and they're puking blood, and some of it's dropping down on him. So why in the world would a sane human being lay at the bottom of a tree while this is happening to them? What would drive you to do? How much could I pay you to lay on the ground and let those guys do that stuff to you? And this guy's not just a crazy guy. His name is Jerry Wilkinson. He's the current chair of biology at the University of Maryland. And he's under there to observe the bats, and he realized they did something that no one had ever seen before. And in fact, scientists have been fighting about for years. So let me explain by creating another word picture. Let's just say there's one little bat. He's tall, maybe a little skinny, wears dark glasses, a little geeky, likes to talk about sound and where it's perfect sound. And so Vince is out one night. Oh, yeah, his name's Vince. He looks like that. So Vince is out one night looking for a big, juicy sack of blood to sink his teeth into. But he's not that smart, so he can't find one. So he flies around all night, nothing, comes back, and he's really, really hungry. And so all the bats come together and hang out. I don't know what they do. Maybe they're like guys at the bar where they talk about past glories. Maybe that's what bats do when they come back together. But little Bince kind of saying, he's kind of like going around looking all gaunt and hungry and saying, please, would you by chance have a little extra blood for me? Because I'm really hungry. And of course the other bat says, well, it's 31 and 31, so of course I can give you blood, right? It's not how it works. So Wilkinson's laying underneath. He's watching bats do this. So what they do is the one bat kind of saddles up to the other one, and they start licking kind of the side of the mouth, the corner of the mouth of the other bat. That's bat language for, I'm hungry, can you puke some blood up so I can eat it? And so what happened is Wilkinson started to watch these bats share blood. And in the minds of scientists, this shouldn't happen. Because in their mind, from an evolutionary standpoint, you only share with relatives to take your genes and your stock and have them propagate. So if you can share blood with your kids, that makes more kids, stronger kids, your genes will propagate. But some scientists later on actually took these bats into the laboratory and did all sorts of weird things to them. But they realized that the bats weren't sharing along lines of blood. Oh, actually, that got weird. They weren't sharing on lines of relationship, genetics. They shared for different reasons. And what they found after studying this thing, sure, they'd share a little bit of for blood, but there was an 8 times more likely that you're going to give blood. So they called them donor bats and recipient bats. If you come to a donor bat and say, would you give me some blood? There's an 8.5 times better chance of you getting blood if you've donated the blood to them previously. Reciprocity. And this, scientists are still like, that can't be. There's no such thing. It's the animal kingdom. Dog eat dog. It's all about genetics and propagation. And yet, we have studies that says it's 8.5 times more likely. Times, not just a little bit. Like, this is massive difference if you're willing to reciprocate first. For all you other propeller heads out there, I started a new thing on the the podcast and the website. I have a show notes section. So if you actually want to read a really long article that's full of a lot of math, I posted it there for you. So you can read about all the bats and who gives what to whom and why it happens. And some of you are nodding like, yeah. But isn't that how our world works too? You look at bats and you think, okay, yeah, of course, if you're generous, people are going to be generous to you, right? But that's kind of how our world works, doesn't it? You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Give and you shall receive. No one wants to be around a selfish person. Our spiritual ancestors spoke about this in a genre in the Bible called wisdom literature. And they actually had this weird, wisdom was the feminine side of God often. And they say this, the generous will prosper. Those who refresh others will themselves be refreshed. Feels true, right? We don't want to give to somebody who's selfish and mean and won't give anything back. So in a sense, we're kind of like little vampire bat colonies, aren't we? Don't ever say a flying rodent didn't teach you anything, okay? This is week 2 of our community reboot series. It's the beginning of us sharing months worth of work and discussion. And it's us trying to find a healthy way of speaking about community after the church, in my humble opinion, has kind of just gone off the rails a bit. It's not that they've missed it. It's almost like we misunderstood it or misused it somehow. And I'm painting with a big brush, I understand. There's some amazing examples. But often it just seems like there's something off. And Jeff shared a little bit last week about kind of where Friends Church has done it, where we've done a good job and where we kind of were maybe right-hearted, but the application didn't go well. So he was honest with it and said, okay, we've learned some lessons the hard way. And so we've been pretty quiet about community for quite a while. And this is the first time we're going, okay, we need to start talking about this again. Because I think there's something powerful here. We need to use it in a better way now. So let's get back to our little bat friends. 8 times more likely if you've shared before to get someone to share with you. And I think the same thing happens for humans. So think about someone in your life who's been there for you. Just take a minute, put someone's face in your mind. They listened to you when you needed to talk. Gave you a hug when you needed one. Lent you a hand. I don't know, whatever it is. Just picture that person in your mind. How do you feel towards them? How do you feel when you're around them? Those are the people, if I haven't spent any time with recently, I'm like, man, I gotta spend more time with that guy. He's like, there's just something recharging about that person in your life, isn't there? Feels great when they're around. They make a horrible day sometimes more bearable. When they ask you for a favor, How's it feel? For me, that's the person, they're like, hey, Vince, can you, and they haven't even finished the sentence. I'm already like, yeah, I'm in. What do you need? Because they've always been there for me. Just like the vampire bats. Back and forth. Back and forth. When you're for that person and they're there for you. Because the reality is, when you're there with this person and you're in the same way for them, you invoke the same emotions in them. They want to be around you. They love being around you. They are what researcher and clinician Stan Tatkin calls, you exist in true mutuality with that person. True mutuality. You're there for them and they're there for you. It's balanced. It's equal and it's reciprocal. And when you think about those relationships, when you picture that person in your mind, they feel awesome, don't they? That's interesting. As soon as we go there, we think, well, how does that work? Is this like tit for tat, or like I give to you, you give to me, and I have this ledger that's like, well, I called you last week, so you should be what to me? Baked you 2 dozen cookies, you bake me 2 dozen, right? It's funny how we get into this mindset of, well, this is a give so I get thing. And the interesting thing about true mutuality is it doesn't actually exist that way at all. In fact, that's antithetical to this idea of true mutuality. Because it's not forced. It's natural. It's two people giving to each other, being there for each other. That's why I didn't call it reciprocity. The bats do reciprocity. It's almost like they keep score. But ours, we're a bit more sophisticated, aren't we? Because there's ebbs and flows in relationships. Sometimes someone's going through a big thing and everyone rallies around. Then, you know, a month later, the kind of the energy has shifted and now that person's there for you because you're going through something. True mutuality exists not in the sameness. For one person, they might be like, hey, you listen to me when I talk. The other person's like, hey, we go to the mountains together. And to them, that feels balanced and equal and mutual, even though it's not the same. There's no need to try and force things in a relationship in true mutuality. Because they know that that doesn't work. You don't keep score, because deep down you know that when you give with an open heart, they're going to give as much back to you. That's true mutuality. And that's what we're defining as true community. People in your life that exist in true mutuality. As soon as I say that, kind of the list of the people in your community just kind of dropped a little bit, didn't it? Kunk. When I came to the realization that a lot of my friends, they're still friends, but I'm realizing I don't call them my true community anymore. Because we don't function in true mutuality. And yet if we did, that'd be amazing, wouldn't it? When we talk about that kind of community, that's the kind of community I want. I want things that are full and balanced and reciprocated, not in that keeping score way, but in the way that there's so much love going back and forth that you never think that it's your turn because you're always like, no, I just want to give more because they keep giving me more. And yet, when we look at that, we go through our lives and we realize there's some people in our lives. What did Jeff call them last week? EGRs, extra grace required. I was going to say pains in the butts, but actually I was going to say something different, but I thought I'd edit for Jeff back there. He's like, don't say it, Vince. For years when I was in church, I grew up this idea that EGRs were like the highest form of relationship for Christians. These are the people you should build like your community around because they need you, and that's what spirituality is all about, right? Give to somebody else. until you realize I would rather kill myself than be out with those people one more night. Why? Because the extra grace required kind of, sort of, sucks the life out of you. Jesus said, love your enemies. It's easy to love your friends, anyone can do that, but love your enemies. Now that's hard. The church I grew up with took that really literally. Forget all the other stuff. No kissing your friends. Do that. And so we had this problem of community that we were supposed to feel good about. God was supposed to make it somehow good, and yet relationships were falling apart, communities were falling apart because these EGRs were just not working. And the reality is, and this I want to make this really clear, I don't think the EGRs were the problem. So any of you who are really self-aware right now who are thinking, I was the EGR, you're off the hook. And I don't think the whole spirituality thing was wrong either. I think there was something in my head that was off. I'll tell you about it for a second. I went to McDonald's a few weeks ago, and there's a guy outside. He's this big dude. He's like, spare change? And of course, I have no change because this is 2015, and who carries change in their pocket? But I was like, hey, I'll buy you a sandwich. So he's like, oh. And like, there's a big group of us. He runs in the front of the group. Like, he's in the front of the line. I'm like at the back of the line going, hey, buddy, like, let's maybe not cut for this, okay? So he comes back, and he stands next to me, and he's like, so I'm going to get the 20-piece McNugget meal with large fries and a large Coke. And he's like bigger than me. So I'm looking up at him like, are we negotiating right now? And I know a 20-piece McNugget meal in the larger scheme of things is not the most expensive meal in the world, but I promised him a sandwich. So after some negotiation and discussion, and I bought him a sandwich. Come on, you've all been there before. Maybe not at McDonald's. But you know, you're at home, you do something for someone in your family, and you're waiting for something in return, and it's just like, ugh. You know, my mom used to come, you know, the meal. It's almost like she took a blanket and like unveiled the meal, and we're all like, and then we'd leave. She's like, that was like 2.5 hours of my life, and you ate it in 4 minutes. Right? You do something for a friend, you reach out, and you're like, you're not really reaching out in the true mutuality way. This is more like, hey, Rod, here's a coffee. You have to leave? But I brought you a coffee. I thought we were going to stay and chat for a little while, right? And the same thing with the McDonald's guy. Here's a sandwich. You make me feel good about being a nice guy. You say, thank you. Oh, I was so hungry. This is going to save my life. I'll probably change my life and go back to school and become a medical doctor. Maybe that's a little bit much, but you know, I'm expecting something. So why is it that a random stranger on the street I'm expecting true mutuality from? Think about that in your life. How many people do you do something for, and there's this kind of thing of like, so when's it my turn? But this person's never given you anything in return. You don't have that kind of relationship with them. Maybe you should, but you don't. In the end, what do you feel? We've all felt it. You kind of get that sick feeling in somewhere, you're like, ugh, that didn't feel very good. Is it because they did something wrong? Is it because you did something wrong? Or is it because you were looking for true mutuality where it doesn't exist? Isn't that interesting? How our expectation of a relationship shifts from being just a moment, a good moment, a generous moment. Buy a guy a sandwich, McDonald's. And I walk away feeling kind of sick. He didn't do anything wrong. It was me. It was my expectation. That's what I think I want to talk about today. There's people who we exist in true mutuality for, who are in our true community, who give in, like, they're just giving us so much water that, like, you can't help but want to give back to them. It's mutual. It's never keeping score because you know they're always there and you'll always be there. And on the other end of the spectrum, there's the people who never give back. And we've put them together and said, all of these are our community, but what if we just saw the people in true mutuality as a community, and these people over here as water opportunities? Because what happens when we take water to somebody? We give with no expectation, right? Here's a sandwich. You can call me a cheap bugger all you want. There's a sandwich. I don't expect anything in return, right? Here's the meal I made for you. Here's the compliment. Here's the coffee. No strings attached. It doesn't matter what they do back to us because we're not looking for it. It's just a free gift to make their world a little bit better. What if we started shifting our community to see it kind of on those ends of spectrums, or a spectrum with those two ends on it? How does that shift for you? Because just think for a second, who in your life now is in true mutuality, and who, when you're really honest about it, is a water opportunity? Some of you right now are going through the list of your family and going, oh, geez. Recently, I was talking to some people, and they're talking, we're talking through this message because if you have a conversation with me before a message, we're going to talk about the message, just so you know. My run group knows that well, don't you? Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. You realize that your parents might be water opportunities. Your siblings. There's a reason why when you go back home for Thanksgiving dinner, you are drained when you get done. Why? Because the energy is going out, but there's no mutuality. And we can talk it all day long. Someone said the other day, but my parents have their own stuff. I said, yeah, but their job was to be a parent to you. Yeah, but... And then I see at this moment, he's like, you're right. My dad's a water opportunity for me now. Might be a parent, might be a sibling. For some of you, you're realizing my best friend and I exist in a relationship that's not mutual. It's always me being there for them when it's drama time, but it's not coming back. Some of you are it's a little awkward because you're sitting next to your partner and thinking to yourself, are we in mutuality? That's a painful one, isn't it? I don't know about you, but when I started wrestling through this, I didn't like how I was feeling. It's probably bringing up feelings of sadness for some. Feeling alone or angry, bitter, neglected. And really, you're saying, Clausen, why do you talk about this stuff? All I've done is I've said, what if we call community this and water opportunities this? I just ask you to look through your life. But how we define things means something to us, doesn't it? It feels. So now what do? I just leave you guys in this place of like, ugh. All week I've been asking, how many true friends do you have? How much true mutuality do you have? And everyone's like doing all the... Well, can I put this person in? No. Well, what about this person? No. Three. Kind of feels crappy when your friends on Facebook are like, you know, 1,000 people. But you realize that three of them exist in true mutuality. So what do? Is that it? Like, so me and Jeff have been talking about this. This is probably why this has taken us so long. Because we've been talking about this for a long time. First trying to figure out what the problem is. And then the other day we started talking about the solution. And me and him, it was almost, you know, those moments where you say, on the count of three, say what you want to do. And, you know, three, two, one, and you yell baseball, and the other one's like, go out for dinner, and you're like, oh, that didn't work the way I planned it. I was like, what happens when you figure out someone's a water opportunity, that they're not part of your true mutuality, not part of your true community? I was like, cut them loose. They're dead to me. And the reason you guys are all laughing is because you're like, that's what I was thinking. Totally. And Jeff, with, you know, the same moment's like, do anything you can to save the relationship. And we're looking at each other going, what's the middle ground here? And I realized after we did this, there's a piece around this, around attachment. Now, if any of you, do you remember the attachment styles, Islands and Waves? If you don't, go onto the website, Filter for Sabotage series. We have five messages. If you're listening on the podcast, go to February-ish 2014 and just listen. So I'll give you a quick recap. This is hyper-simplified. There's a group called Islands. And Islands have normalized neglect, which means that in relationships, because of their childhood, how they were raised, they assume no one's going to take care of them. Like, I got to take care of myself. And you'll feel Islands often in a relationship, they'll pull away. I need me time. I just need some quiet time over there. Often they'll even hesitate building relationships. You're like, you're really fun. And they're like, oh, hey, ho, we've hung out once this week. Because in their mind, if we get together, this is how it's going to go. I need you, I give to you. I need more, I give more. That's the deceptive brain message in an Island's mind. It's funny, I know Island's in the crowd, so I'm trying not to look at you. Hey, look, there's a flag up at the back there. I am an Island. Well, I call myself Recovering Island. I'm working at it. Islands tend to pull away. Now, on the other end of the spectrum is Waves. So if Islands normalize neglect, meaning if we're in a relationship, I'm going to get sucked dry. That's the assumption. Waves have the assumption that when I'm in a relationship, people are going to leave me. You know that feeling when you're in desperate need of somebody and the person's right there and they just turn around and walk away and you're just like, oh. And Waves live in their entire life with all of the people in their lives. They're just waiting for the moment for them to leave. It's going to happen. And just when I need you the most, you're going to walk away. Because their childhood was a childhood that someone wasn't there for them in the way they needed to be taken care of. And so whereas an island will pull away from relationships, Waves will often do, and they do a number of things, but one of the things they'll do is they'll become whatever you need to be in relationship with you. You need me to be funny? Great, I'm the funny guy. You need me to be caring? I'm the caring guy. You need me to have it all together? Yeah, whatever you need. Ha, ha, ha. But they don't show their true selves. You see the mask that everyone wants to be friends with, because then they won't leave me. But inside, you need them. You need to be honest with them, but you can't, because you go, if I show who I truly am, they're gone. And I'll be alone. And I know it seems like Islands are anti-community. They're not. They're just scared of people. And Waves feel like they're hyper-community. Like, yeah, that's what it's all about. But that's not true either. Because you're not in community with a wave often. You're in community of their mask. The thing that they're showing you. Not truly who they are. And the truth is, neither of these are healthy. And I'm not saying that to shame anyone. This is the way we're raised. Our brains are wired this way. And we can change it. But this is the way we interact with the world. So when we're looking at relationships that exist in true mutuality, this is a problem because an island's going to say, end the relationship. A wave's going to say, you have to save it at all costs, even if it's not truly mutual. You got to do it, right? Do whatever you can. But the answer, I think, sits someplace in the middle. And something we call anchors. And if I can generalize, anchors get true mutuality. They grew up in this. They had families that existed this way. They have all their friends this way. They never even conceive of a relationship that's not truly mutual because that's how their world works. They're not scared of people. They're not scared that someone's going to overwhelm them. They're not scared of being themselves. They can be completely open. Because they know that relationships exist in true mutuality, in giving and receiving. You'll always have someone there for you because you'll always give to them. Just take a minute for a second. Remember how you imagine your life and Thanksgiving dinner? Imagine it through the lens of an anchor culture. Imagine everyone in your life as anchors, just as you are. There's so much love going back and forth that you just can't help but give because you've received so much. You come away from a family gathering recharged. You come away from being out with your friends just invigorated. You feel like somehow you've won the lottery because people have been giving into you all day. And you just feel like you're like full to the top. Imagine a community like that. Sounds pretty amazing, doesn't it? So Jeff and I said, well, how do we make this happen? And we came up with something that I'm not sure you're going to love, to be honest. But you know what? When you think about it, I think it's the key. And it's this, to have an open and honest conversation with the people in your life. To be vulnerable, to be honest. Look something like this. Saying to someone, you know, I feel like I call you all the time. Can we take turns? Or I feel like when we're together, it's all about you. We don't often focus on me. Do you think we could work towards a balance in our relationship? Before you do something for someone else that you'll resent because it's just one more thing, what if you said this? Can I be honest with you? I can do this for you. But you know what? Our relationship doesn't feel very balanced these days. Would you be open to talking about that? When we're together, I feel like if I don't play some role, some funny guy role or the caregiver role or have it all together role, it feels like you're not going to be friends with me. I don't want to play that role anymore. Can I just be honest and be me from now on? Would you be okay with that? Scary, isn't it? To be that honest. What if they say, well, screw you, we're done. I like it the way it is. They make fun of you. You're your most vulnerable, and they take that as a moment to take a shot. Or what if they fill in whatever blank you're scared of? But now try this one. What if that changes things for the better? What if that takes them on the scale of true mutuality and water opportunity? What if that starts to move them down this road? So when I ask you next year, how many people do exist in true mutuality, instead of going, you're going, you know, I got 4 solid and I'm working on the 5th. Think of your relationship with those people who right now or just sucking the life out of you. What if you could move them towards true mutuality? Just think about the energy of your life. How different your life would feel. Is the conversation appropriate for everyone? No. Some of you are saying, Clausen, you do not know my situation. There is no way. And you know what? You're right. Some things, It's not appropriate. Some people will be water opportunities your whole life. There's nothing you can do. But you know what? Before we just cut them off, or before we just become whatever they want, you see that with when you first get together with someone, you know, you're dating and you're hanging out together. You go to meet the family. You show up at the family and suddenly the person you're dating is like not the person anymore and you're like, oh, this is your with the parents' personality. Hi, my name is Vince. How are you? Right? We put on the role. Before we do that, what if we tried this? What if we were honest? I don't know about you, but I think that'd be amazing. Because I want to go to family reunions. And I want you to go to family reunions and have them be a recharging time. I want you with best friends that you truly yourself with. And it's balanced and you feel like, wow, they give so much to me. I just want to give more. I talked about this message with someone this week. He was just like, my wife gives so much to me. I'm not keeping score, but I'm just trying to keep up. Like, there's just so much love going back and forth. Imagine relationships like that in true mutuality. That's the kind of life I want. It's okay. I'll be honest, I'm a bit islandy. So if that relationship or that conversation doesn't happen, I'd like to give you permission to cut that person loose. Because really, if someone's going to say, look, I will not exist in mutuality with you, what do you have left? Now, if that's your partner, that's a complex situation. I'm going to suggest going to see Dana, my counselor. She's solid. But you know what? What if we oriented our lives towards the people who will give us reciprocity? When we ask, they'll give, and we give back, as opposed to these people that we're reaching out to and they're not giving us anything. We're frustrated. But these people, we don't cut them loose. We just go, oh, I'm going to take water to that person today. It might be your parent. It might be your spouse. It might be your sibling. It might be your friend. It might be a stranger on the street. They're a water opportunity. I think if we orient our minds to have those expectations and then not just give up on the two camps that we have, but start to see what kind of conversation we have to move these people over, I think we're going to experience true community. Some of us for the very first time. That's what I want to encourage you for today. Now before you go, some of you are going, okay, so Vince, you said like three lines of conversations we could have. A little more complex than that. Luckily, Jeff's going to come next week and share the hows and the whys, and very importantly, the whos. Figuring out who in your life you should build this with, what you should look for, how to develop it. Because as you saw, I had Proverbs all the way through the message. Our spiritual ancestors for thousands of years have been saying, this stuff matters. This stuff is spiritual. And we've all felt it. When we do this balance wrong, when it's all EGRs in our lives, we're drained, aren't we? So next week, Jeff's going to explain it all. And for some of you, you are now going, as I'm talking, you stop paying attention to me right when I start talking about EGRs. Because if you're really, really self-aware, we realize that maybe we're the EGR. We've been sabotaging our relationships. Sometimes we don't even realize what we're doing, but we can feel the people pulling away, or there's no reciprocity there. There's no mutuality. And we realize it's something we're doing. And don't worry, we haven't left you guys. In December, the first week in December, we're starting a series just in time for all the big family gatherings and the staff parties and all that stuff. Teach you how to understand how your stuff is getting in the way of the relationships that you want, in the way of the health of the relationships you want. And it's not even hard. A little bit of mindfulness, a little bit of awareness. Mindfulness is a little complex. It's hard. Not hard as in lifting weights hard, but more as in like, it's going to take some work to dig through yourself. But once you do, it's amazing what you can do and the health that you can do. That's where we find anchor culture. That's where we find our own health. So December 1st, come on out. It's an amazing one. So as the song says, this week, say what you need to say. Have the conversations you have. If it goes badly, call me. I'll buy you a coffee or a drink, whatever. If it goes well, you can thank me. But I appreciate you guys doing your work. I'm proud of y'all. Have a great week.